Hi, I'm Moji Alawodeyau from the Feminist Buzzkills Live Pod, the only podcast that helps you navigate the news in this post-pro anti-abortion hellscape. Each week, with co-host Liz Winstead, we dissect all the news from that sketchy intersection of abortion and misogyny with providers and activists working on the ground. The cherry on top is we have amazing comedy guests who help us laugh through the rage. Feminist Buzzkills Live drops Fridays wherever you pod. Listen and subscribe, because when BS is popping, we pop off.
Our press secretary gave alternative facts to that.
My goal in this deposition was to be truthful, but not particularly helpful.
Welcome to Unspun, the podcast that makes you better at finding the truth. The way people get news is changing. It used to be that there were many reporters who would research stories and write articles, but now politicians and famous people share information directly with you on social media and the internet. That means you find out things fast, but it's up to you to make sure the information's actually accurate. And newsmakers don't always do their part. The temptation to manipulate information is strong. They bend the truth to deceive so that they can avoid accountability, so that they can advance their agendas. When you recognize these agendas, you can sometimes find out what's real. And we're at a crossroads where anyone can share anything online, so it's important to sharpen your critical thinking skills. Finding that deception before it goes viral is pretty much a survival skill now, and we're going to do it together. Let's get unspun. Hello, truth seekers, and welcome to this week's Unspun. I don't know about you, but I've felt like I'm in a bit of a whirlwind lately. The news is coming at me really fast, and it's getting harder to be thoughtful about what's going on. I feel really badly for my friends in the media. Things are breaking out all over, and they are really struggling because they just don't have as many people on staff as they need anymore. So some stuff is getting dropped, and audiences are letting them know about it. I feel like some of this is intentional on the part of the newsmakers. They're planning things and timing things to keep people struggling with the chaos. I do have one tip for you. Look for news from multiple sources, and not just on social media. You know, even if a lot of media is paywalled, you can get a lot from visiting different sites and looking at the headlines. Anyway, this week I'm wrapping up a series of episodes on the role of the press. We've talked about the role of the press in a democracy and in an autocracy. And today, something I think is pretty darn relevant in the times we find ourselves in now, the role of the press in an oligarchy. We're going to look at an example or two and think about how a government can affect the press and vice versa. To get started, I'm sorry if I sound like a freshman essay for a second, but the dictionary definition of an oligarchy is a government of the few. But I think the second definition says more, which in Merriam-Webster is a government in which a small group exercises control, especially for corrupt and selfish purposes. And when I was watching the U.S. presidential inauguration a few weeks ago and looking about billionaire Roe made me think that's kind of where we're at. A more refined view is that an oligarchy is defined as a political system where a small group of elites holds power and wealth in a society. And you know, they can get that power in different ways. So they could be royal, they could be rich, they could have a superior education, they could be a military leader or even a religious one. And you find oligarchies in different political systems, including aristocracies, dictatorships, absolute monarchies, communist regimes, and even debatably democracies. But the important point is that concentrating the power in the hands of a few means less power in the hands of others. And the people who have that power tend to work very hard to keep that position, which means that the social order is very hard to change. The way that oligarchies work can significantly influence the way the press works under them, and this is mostly through controlling information. In an oligarchy, it's common for the elite to be able to control that information, and they really do want to. And that makes sense, right? If you control information, you control what people are able to do. You know, it's not an accident that the Founding Fathers put freedom of information in the First Amendment to the Constitution in the U.S. Because if the people are going to have power, they have to have access to power. Knowledge really is power. Consider, if you don't know about the bad things that people in power are doing, you can't really object to them. And if all the information you have is positive, you will probably have a positive opinion, even if that's not merited. You really see this playing out in our divided media system today. So if you don't have the habit of looking at highly partisan news from multiple sides, I really suggest you take the chance to do that sometime. I'm recording this on the night of March 10th, 2025, and here are the top five stories on MSNBC. Quote, the White House line on Canada and fentanyl takes a bizarre turn. Quote, Rubio's tenure as Secretary of State reaches new lows with reported White House tensions. Quote, Hegseth says Pentagon, quote, does not do climate change crap, end quote, doubling down on ignorance, and, quote, stocks plunge as Trump refuses to rule out recession. Now, One American News Network, their top headlines this evening, quote, Sanders sparks outrage for featuring trans punk rocker at rally amid pure evil song controversy. Quote, Odell Beckham Jr. and comedian Drewski named an amended Diddy lawsuit accused of 2018 gang rape. Quote, Hamas ignores hostage release deadline, leading Israel to cut off Gaza's electricity. Enough with the talk, it's time for action. Quote, first 7 seasons of The Apprentice to stream on Amazon Prime Video. And, quote, Musk, there is a massive cyber attack happening against X following outages. Did you notice how different those stories were? If you follow mostly conservative or liberal news, your view of the world is being constrained through control of your information source. And oligarchs like to do that. Through controlling information, for example, keeping certain news outlets out of press conferences, oligarchs also like to control the media itself. The media can be constrained, for example, having access denied to newsmakers. The media can be dependent, for example, having government information hidden in records that the media depends on the goodwill of the government to give them. And the media can even just be flat-out complicit with the oligarchs. And when this happens, the media can't really do its job as a watchdog. Although this can be an aggressive and corrupt act, it isn't always exactly that. Research suggests that sometimes it's more paternalism, which is to say that the people who come to power in an oligarchy actually believe that they are smarter than everybody else, and therefore, they know better what people should worry about and what they shouldn't. I think some of the ethos in Silicon Valley toward the government right now feels like this. The relationship between the press and an oligarchy can change over time in some kind of predictable ways. Often, the press is more cooperative with those in power as an oligarchy is becoming established, and I think there's a lot of reasons for this. The need for access is certainly a big one. There's also the need for the glamour that you might feel. You know, for example, if you're a well-known news anchor and your picture is on billboards, or if you have offers for book contracts. The idea of a journalist as a celebrity should be a troubling one when you think about the independence of the press. But it's the powerful in society who often have the power to make people celebrities. So there's a lot of pressures to be compliant. When powerful people control most of the economy, they control who your advertisers are, for example. We saw Facebook exerting a lot of influence through its program to work with journalism to provide more vetted information, for example. And the problem with that is, when the oligarch gets tired of how you're covering them, they can just withdraw that support. But what are some other ways in which oligarchies can control the press? First up is direct ownership. Where do people get most of their news? They get it from social media. Who controls the most popular social media? The people who were standing next to the president on Inauguration Day. Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg. Because oligarchs often have a lot of wealth and power, they can directly control or own major media outlets. You know, so for example, Rupert Murdoch, who's a powerful media figure, owns Fox News in the US and Sky News in Australia. Another example comes from Venezuela. The story of the bully bourgeoisie begins with the rise of Hugo Chavez to power in Venezuela in 1999. Chavez was boosting his Bolivarian Revolution, which sought to take down the traditional elite and redistribute wealth to the people. However, in the process, a whole new elite class emerged, one that came to be known as the bully bourgeoisie or the bully chicos. This group was composed of individuals with close ties to the Chavez administration, who got a lot of wealth through government contracts and currency controls and just corruption, you know, basically an oligarchy. In the early 2000s, as Chavez consolidated power, he nationalized key industries like oil, telecommunications, and banking. And this really made opportunities for people in his inner circle to profit immensely. For example, Alejandro Andrade, a former finance minister under Chavez, became notorious for his extravagant lifestyle with private jets and luxury properties, and it was emblematic of people like him who lived in a really stark contrast to the socialist ideas that they publicly touted. So how does the media fit in this? Well, the media were really important in shaping the narrative around the bully bourgeoisie, so pro-government outlets such as the state-run VTV often portrayed these people as local supporters of the revolution. There was opposition media, too, including publications like El Nacional and Tal Cual, which exposed corruption and hypocrisy of the bully bourgeoisie, and investigative journalists coined that term to highlight the contradictions inside Chavez's administration. When Chavez died in 2013, Nicolás Maduro assumed the presidency, and the influence of those bully bourgeoisie only got bigger. There was an economic crisis, of course, that gripped Venezuela during Maduro's tenure, further highlighting those disparities between that wealthy elite and that struggling population. and members of the bully bourgeoisie were implicated in scandals like the Panama Papers, which showed that they had offshore accounts and hidden assets. Now, throughout this period, the media landscape in Venezuela was still really polarized. So there were state-owned media outlets that continued to defend the bully bourgeoisie, and independent and opposition media, they faced a lot of censorship and persecution. In systems where oligarchies have close ties to the government, they can influence the appointment of people to regulatory bodies that oversee their companies or the media. And this can lead to what they call regulatory capture. This is where regulations are shaped to favor the interests of the oligarchy and their preferred media outlets rather than ensuring a free and fair press. Or there might just be straight-up censorship. Oligarchies often seek to control the flow of information to maintain their power. And this can involve directly censoring critical content. It can mean restricting access to information for journalists or strategically managing information release in a way that serves their interests. So again, you know, it could be paternalism. Authorities decide what information the public should know, and they use that to keep gatekeep information from journalists. And when the media are weak, like they really are now, oligarchies can take advantage of that to exert control. Because the consequences for not supporting the elite can be pretty severe. Oligarchies will often exert strong control over the flow of information, and those journalists who are challenging the elite may just be censored in their work, preventing their reporting from reaching the public. For example, when a cartoonist at the Washington Post submitted a cartoon about oligarchy that featured the owner of the Washington Post, he insisted that it not be run. Elites can also just deny access to crucial information, which makes it really hard to conduct investigative journalism. So, for example, government employees can be told that they're not allowed to talk to the public or the press, even about things that aren't actually classified information. And the next one is really concerning. Oligarchies often have influence over the legal system, and they can use that to intimidate and silence critical journalists through lawsuits and investigations and even politically motivated prosecutions. Even if the journalists win, this can drain their resources, it can create a chilling effect on reporting, and sometimes journalists even go to jail. And in more extreme cases, journalists who pose a significant challenge to an oligarchy may face direct threats, harassment, intimidation, even physical violence against themselves or their families. So when the elite constantly reinforce that the media is the enemy of the people, this can cause people to lose trust in journalism. And this can undermine the journalist's credibility with the public and reduce the impact of their reporting. And it's not just mean words. One example, for example, involves Demon Shun, a photojournalist for WCCO-TV in Minnesota. And during a Trump rally in Duluth in October 2020, Shun was filming near the event when a Trump supporter confronted him. This individual punched Shun's phone out of his hands, despite Shun identifying himself as a journalist. And there was another incident in December of 2024 when Jerron Alex, a reporter for a TV station in Colorado, was attacked by a man who reportedly identified himself as a Trump supporter. This man followed Alex for miles, confronted him outside his news station, physically assaulted him, putting him in a headlock and trying to choke him. And, you know, at least 17 journalists were assaulted while covering the events on January 6th, according to the U.S. Press Freedom Tracker. One particularly striking example was the destruction of camera equipment that belonged to the AP and some other media outlets. Rioters gathered the equipment, set it on fire, and even scrawled "Murder the Media" on a door in the Capitol. An oligarch's lack of accountability can create an environment where such actions are possible without any fear of, you know, repercussions for the people in power. And in some cases, the elite can even pardon the crowd who does such acts on their behalf. I need to take a quick break, but when I return, we'll talk about what journalists can do in the face of an oligarchy. I'll be right back. Welcome back. The power imbalance that comes along with an oligarchy makes it really exceptionally challenging for journalists to keep their integrity and ethical standards intact. There are some things they can do, though. Primary among these is maintaining their commitment to verification and facts. Because oligarchs can control a lot of the flow of information, this sets up the chance for a lot of disinformation. And this means that journalists have to go the extra mile, looking for several independent sources to verify something, for example. Being transparent with their audience about how a story is reported. But I really can't emphasize enough how journalists have an important role in keeping people aware of the truth. When it's difficult or impossible to get access to information on national or international levels, journalists can take the opportunity to focus on the community. You might be heavily controlled in reporting on your state government, but you can report on individual cities. Things that are done at a big, even national level will usually have impacts and inputs from cities and local groups and businesses. If you tell stories from that angle, it can be a way of getting information about the elites. These kind of stories also directly impact the lives of citizens like you. So if you have the ability to support local media in an oligarchy, by all means, please do so. Now, we should talk a minute about anonymous sources, because these are another option. When you have elites who have a lot to lose controlling information, they will often try to silence the people that they control. But sometimes, these people have information that's important, and it may even be the case that sharing that information isn't wrong, it's just not expedient for the oligarch. I have to think about my book about the alt-gov movement in the United States when I talk about this. So during the last Trump administration, some civil servants and others who worked with the government and had access to how it worked reached out with information about what was going on. They were professionals, right? And they understood the parameters of their jobs, and they didn't share information that it was not legal to share. But in a really complex system like a big government, there's a lot of information about how things work that's fine to share, but nobody would think to ask for. And so these people were able to share some of that information about things like what a shutdown means to the drug supply or what resources are available for people in a disaster. Because they were concerned that the government was possibly going to be vindictive, they wanted to do this anonymously, and that was something that I had to preserve in order to write the book. Now, anonymous sources have some real issues in journalism, and I did an episode about this earlier. They're generally going to come off as not being as credible to your audience. But if you're a journalist, your ethics do also say that you should be protecting your sources. To the extent that media can cultivate quality anonymous sources in these oligarchic situations, it's helpful. If it is known that media will do this, it can encourage people to come forward with important information. And one way I see journalists doing this now is providing opportunities to reach out to them on encrypted messaging platforms. And another thing that I heard when I was talking to these government workers was the idea of their oath, which is something federal workers do. It is an oath to the Constitution, not to the current leader of the administrative branch. Now, professional journalists don't take an oath, but they do have a similar obligation that they take on. And it's not to the owner of their TV station or newspaper or website, it's to a professional code of ethics. And even journalists who work for media outlets that are under the control of oligarchs can adhere to their ethical code. When the Washington Post owner decided the editorial page was only going to be about particular topics, the editorial page editor resigned. I believe he did this because of his adherence to the ethics of journalism, which suggests that facts come before political expedience. And then there's responsibility to the audience. Journalists need to have the trust of their audience, and consistent ethical reporting goes a long way here. When journalists are responsive to the public and answer the public, that helps people feel like they can trust the journalism. Journalists can also focus on transparency and accountability. And even in the most restrictive political setting, journalists can focus on reporting on official statements, government documents, legal proceedings, as a way of highlighting discrepancies and maybe a lack of accountability where it exists. Even seemingly neutral reporting of official information can sometimes reveal shortcomings. And you know, people say journalism is a first draft of history. Journalists need to meticulously document their findings and preserve evidence of corruption, abuses of power, and even efforts to censor them. This documentation can be crucial for the future, even though it can't be immediately published. Now, alternative media platforms, such as independent blogs or social media, can also play a role. Because in oligarchies, where traditional media is often owned or heavily influenced by the ruling elite, alternative platforms can be a channel to bypass direct censorship. And so that can help to disseminate that true information that does challenge the people in power. You know, and even citizens have a role in this. Social media and blogs can let citizens become content creators and distributors. And there are more citizens than there are media outlets, and this can be harder for elites to control. This can lead to the spread of diverse perspectives and information that might be suppressed by the oligarchy. These alternatives can also cater to specific communities and interests such as racial and ethnic minorities or rural citizens and others in news deserts. Now, this is not a perfect solution. Oligarchies do have a few tactics they use to control and suppress information, even on alternative platforms. And this can include internet censorship, website blocking, and using bots and disinformation to manipulate social media. Because alternative media don't have the established history like legacy media, such as, you know, big newspapers and TV networks, it's also easier for elites to discount what alternative media publishes. People are more likely to believe they're unreliable just because they aren't as familiar. I've also seen elites just use the flood the zone strategy, creating their own disinformation that looks like alternative media. It's state-sponsored disinformation aimed at discrediting the press. They can also simply deny access sometimes, refusing to answer press requests or give media credentials to alternative media. So the oligarchy actively works to limit their reach and credibility, and so their survival is a constant struggle. But there is some hope that countries can support each other when one is struggling under an oligarchy. There are several strategies. that international organizations and governments can use to help with specific challenges that journalists are facing in these environments. Here's some ideas. Since oligarchs often control mainstream media, the international community can provide money and things like internet hosting for independent blogs, online news platforms, and citizen journalism initiatives that try to, you know, give unbiased information. This support can help a lot because financial viability is a real challenge for most media. Technical tools can help, including VPNs and digital security tools like encrypted communication platforms and especially offsite data storage. Journalists and oligarchies face significant risks of harassment, prosecution, and violence, so the international community can strengthen and fund organizations that maybe give legal help, safety training, emergency support for journalists. There's even cases where countries with free media have hosted media outlets forced out of oligarchies. For example, Lenta.ru was a prominent Russian news website, and Galina Timchenko, the former chief editor, was dismissed due to political pressures. So, along with the existing staff, they moved to set up a new news outlet in Latvia called Meduza that still covers Russia. The team behind Meduza sought to create a platform that could operate without fear of government interference. And by establishing itself in Latvia, Meduza got the freedom to report on Russian politics and society with an independent voice. The outlet used digital platforms to reach its audience, making sure that its content remained accessible to readers in Russia and beyond, even though it was a challenge to operate from abroad. And you could think of this as not just a logistical shift, but a statement of defiance against the suppression of free press in Russia. And the Russians actually named it a, quote, undesirable organization in 2023, meaning that visiting the site or giving them an interview, that's an offense. But Meduza continues, supported in part by internationals who give the publication operating money. International bodies, governments, and human rights organizations can publicly condemn censorship, intimidation, and violence against journalists in countries with oligarchic rule. International organizations like the United Nations can serve as platforms to raise concerns about the state of journalism in oligarchic countries and to advocate for the protection of press freedom, and this can provide some diplomatic pressure. And finally, what we're doing right now can also help. One way to counter elite propaganda is media literacy. Media literacy programs created anywhere can reach across borders, and even this podcast that you're listening to right now is downloaded in more than 50 countries, some of which are under oligarchic rule. So supporting media literacy means helping people learn to critically evaluate information and to identify propaganda. And that's my goal here, Truth Seekers. I hope you stay sharp out there. Thanks for getting Unspun with me this week. Unspun is a production of me, Amanda Sturgill, and is a proud member of the MSW Media family of podcasts. Send me your thoughts and ideas about trickery in the news on Gmail at theunspunpodcast@gmail.com. I even write back. And find this episode's show notes and more information at theunspunpodcast.substack.com. Want to learn more and get smarter? Check out my book, Detecting Deception, Tools to Fight Fake News, which is available on Amazon or your favorite online bookseller. And until next time, stay sharp, everyone.
Hi, I'm Moji Alawodeyal from the Feminist Buzzkills Live Pod, the only podcast that helps you navigate the news in this post-pro anti-abortion hellscape. Each week with co-host Liz Winstead, we dissect all the news from that sketchy intersection of abortion and misogyny with providers and activists working on the ground. The cherry on top is we have amazing comedy guests who help us laugh through the rage. Feminist Buzzkills Live drops Fridays wherever you pod. Listen and subscribe, because when BS is popping, we pop off.